Okay, now next on the tee with me in this special edition of the show is John Simpson. John is the founder of the OnCourse Foundation, which offers injured military veterans an opportunity to participate in the game of golf. Whether it's as a player or employment in the golf industry, the foundation conducts events in 15 major markets each year. John also worked for IMG for many years alongside Mark McCormick in supporting the Big Three of Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Gary Player. Mr. Palmer was a patron of OnCourse since its inception. John went on to manage the business affairs of players like Nick Faldo, Vijay Singh, Bernard Langer, Nick Price, and several others. And it is a huge privilege to have him with me today here on Next on the Tee. Hi, John. Thanks for coming on the show.
Nice speaking to you, Chris.
John, I want to start out by going back to early childhood for you. I read that you had polio as a kid. Talk about what it was like growing up for you and dealing with that.
Well, it was interesting looking back and quite character building. But I had a lot of operations when I was 13. So I think I was in hospital for about a year altogether. And I was very lucky because my father played golf and a friend of his played golf. And they said to me, although you're in a brace and your left leg doesn't work, the one game you can play on a level playing field with able-bodied is golf. And so I started playing golf. And as they say, the rest is history.
And John, speaking of your father and uncle were pilots in World War II. I read your uncle was shot down. But talk about your family, military ties, and the impact that had on your life.
Sure. Well, my dad was a Spitfire and Hurricane pilot in the Second World War and stayed in until 56, where he flew jets. And my mother was a dental nurse in the Royal Air Force as well. So I was brought up as a sort of RAF brat, if you like, moving all over the place. And it had an influence on me in the fact that I really wanted to be a fighter pilot myself, but obviously realized that wasn't physically possible and that I'd really better find something else to do that would keep me occupied and help me give me a good career. And I was very lucky that I had heard about Mark McCormack managing the Big Three. And in fact, it was Arnold Palmer that was patron of the charity. And I just thought, I think it's the business of the future. And I wrote to him and a bit naughtily said that I didn't think he'd go on much longer without me. And he must have thought, who is this idiot writing this? And anyway, I met with him and that was it really. I got a job in the first three. Took about luck. The idea was to try and sign players outside of the States. And the first three that joined were Nick Faldo, Bernard Langer, and Nicky Price, which is not a bad three ball to start off with for anybody.
What is it?
A lot of luck there, and then obviously grew from that into many of the world's top players, and I had a tremendous career for around 20 years.
So let's take that a step further. It's not like Mark handed you those guys. How did you go about getting those guys to sign on the dotted line?
Some really good names, three of them you just mentioned, the Big Three.
Yeah, I'm losing you again.
And then, you know, when you sign these guys, and obviously we're the similar ages, and so the fact that they could then speak to older clients of ours, who would say, "Look, join," with a sort of thumbs up from those guys, it was easier to sign new players than it is now, I can assure you.
So, as their business manager, I mean, these guys obviously were some of the greatest players, and over a couple of decades, just looking at the 80s, the 90s, and probably even into the early parts of the 2000s, we'll get to Bernard Langer and how great he is at the age of 66 almost. But when you look at those guys and they're starting to rack up wins, they're racking up majors. What was it like for you to be leading their business affairs and watching these guys grow into some of the greatest players of all time?
Well, it was very exciting, I must say. And it was a great period of time because it was a time that Europe was sort of having, thanks to Seve to begin with, and then with the rest of the world, with Greg and these guys, were some of the best players in the world. And it was an exciting time because golf was becoming an interesting area for major sponsors and corporates and blue chip companies to get involved with. So there was a lot of new areas of companies that wanted to get involved. And we always had the process that if you had the best player from each country, and then you managed them, you would then be able in a position to get all the major sponsors and blue chip companies from those countries. And then ideally start a tournament that they could all play in. We then film it with the film company, TWI, which we started, and obviously put our players into it. So it was a really good formula that Mark thought of that was simple, but got the players, then owned the events, and then owned the television.
Having worked so closely with Bernard Langer, does it surprise you at all that here he is, decades later, setting the all-time wins record on the Champions Tour, still winning majors like he just did at the U.S. Senior Open, and the guy's almost 66 years of age?
You'll be surprised to know, and I actually wrote him a little email saying it didn't surprise me, because honestly, it didn't. He had so much going for him, character-wise, and so strong in many areas. But golf was probably the weakest part in those days, because, you know, early on, when we actually signed him, you know, he just got the yips. And I remember the first time I saw him play, he hit drew a drive on a par five, faded a par sort of a 3-wood into 15 or 20 feet, and he just holed the fourth putt.
Oh my!
And it was, and all the guys playing with him had their back; they couldn't watch it. And he went out straight away and started practicing his putting. And I just thought he was such an amazing guy. And I asked two players. One was Tony Jacklin. I said, "What do you think of Bernard Langer?" And he said, "Once you've got the yips, you will never, ever be able to win tournaments. That's the end of your career. Don't think about it." And I asked Ray Floyd to have a look at him. And he said, "I haven't played with him, but I heard he had trouble with his putting." And Ray actually saw him on the practice ground. He said, "I don't know about why, I haven't seen him play, but I can see three knuckles on his left hand, and I don't think he'll hit the ball high enough to win in America."
Wow.
Well, he proved them all wrong, because he changed things to get it right. You know, I'm sure they were, in their own mind, they were right, but he managed to change. And, you know, he's exactly the same guy. Even the clothing, not many people can say that.
So, John, as they start winning and they start racking up majors, I have to imagine demand for their time, appearances, endorsements, things had to be going crazy. What was it like fielding the demand that corporations and shows and people had for them, while also making sure they had the right amount of time to continue to focus on how to win golf tournaments?
Well, the major, the most important thing for these guys was winning majors. And we all knew that if you continue to win majors, perform in majors, win other tournaments, the money would always be there. You always make money on the back of that. So, you know, we're always very careful that what they did was nothing short term, but long term. And, you know, they wouldn't do anything that would affect their chances in preparing or getting ready for the big ones. So I got, you know, my job was always to sort of deliver everything. If someone rung me and said, "I want one of these guys and I'll pay him, you know, whatever it takes to get them there," I had to report that. And they would make the decision. They usually say to me, what would you do? And I said, "I wouldn't do it." And they said, "Well, we agree." So it was a sort of relationship built on trust. And the goals that they had were the goals that we had. And you had to take a long-term approach into the whole business.
John, I'm sure over the years you had to field some crazy requests. What are some of the asks that made you shake your head and say, "You want one of my players to do what?"
You know, there's many of them. Some of them we can't even talk about. But yeah, there were some really weird ones. And I remember one chap saying, "What would it cost to play with one of these guys?" And And I thought it was the media or trying to find out what the fees would be. And I said, well, who is this? And he said, well, I can't really say, which was basically, in a very nice way, the end of the conversation, because if I don't know who I'm talking to, anyway, it turned out to be a really super group from it was the Brunei, you know, the Sultan of Brunei.
Wow.
And so they wanted, and it ended up with about 10 or 15 of the top golfers going over to Brunei after playing in the Johnny Walker tournaments in Thailand for a day and a night. And I don't think anybody ever got any more fees or more fun than they had in doing that. And that was a phone call that could have easily, you know, nothing could have happened with, because nobody would say who it was. And I wasn't going to say how much it was going to cost to people I didn't know. But everybody was trying to keep everything quiet. So that was pretty bizarre.
John, you visited the Headley Court Rehabilitation Center in the UK there in 2008. Talk about what you saw there. And was that really what led to the start of the OnCourse Foundation?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm obviously being disabled myself, and I played golf, and somebody who I played with, and I wasn't too sure what he did, but he actually worked at Headley Court and asked if I would go down and speak to some of his people. And I thought it was a school, or I wasn't too sure what it was. But I played well that day, and, you know, I thought, sure. And I found out it was Headley Court. It had a big effect on me, because, you know, the injuries I saw were horrific a lot of the time. Youngsters, very young guys, and you know, I just remembered my situation, and no one ever told me that golf was a game that I could play during my rehab, for the reasons we talked about, and the confidence, self-esteem, and playing on a level playing field. That's the key with able-bodied people. And so I thought, I'm in a great position being in the golf industry, and I say being disabled myself, to start a charity that would help them to play golf on a long-term basis with the aim of getting them employment in the golf and related industries. And luckily, that's all that came about. And that's when I spoke to a few people, like Arnold Palmer said immediately that he would become the patron for us. And, you know, the sort of help we got early on, basically in the public sector, and not from governing bodies particularly, except for the RNA, were very helpful to actually get cracking and create this. It's quite difficult to start a charity, you know. It's amazing how many people want to let you know that something like 75% of all charities started have gone bankrupt within 3 years. So I got the message, and that's one thing that was never going to happen, because I just had a gut feeling that this was really going to work, and thank goodness I was proved right.
You mentioned Mr. Palmer as a patron of the foundation. Talk about his influence and the things he was able to help you achieve.
Well, he was an amazing guy, number one. I have huge admiration for what Arnold did, obviously, but not on the golf course, but as a person. And every year we would take 20 of our guys to Orlando, to the Grand Vista, the Marriott there. We still do it. And to do a week's sort of getting involved in golf and training and coaching. And then Arnold would always invite them over for a cup of tea or coffee, whatever. And the way he spoke to them, being an ex-vet himself, was quite extraordinary. And he always had time for people. And I thought it was funny that the first time we went, some of the youngsters, of course, they're not golfers. And when we said we were going over to meet Arnold Palmer, all they knew was, is that where they make the drink? I said, no, it's not. It's actually a person who's, you know, I said, we call him the king. And it's amazing, after, you know, meeting him, they all turned around and said, my goodness me, he is the king. What a great man. And he was. He was great. And he knew exactly how to speak to them in a very positive way. And, you know, was just fantastic. That's all I would tell you. He was brilliant.
John, I have to imagine that you've seen some heartwarming stories based on the impact that OnCourse has had on veterans' lives and other people that you've touched. Do you mind sharing some of the the stories that really make your heart feel good?
Yeah, sure, sure. Well, I think from the difference in guys who sometimes can't even look you in the eyes, and that's obviously with not only physical injuries, but with mental injuries, with PTSD. And you see them playing great golf, enjoying life again. And one of them pointed out that a happy daddy is a good daddy. I remember that hit me pretty hard when I realized how true that was. And just sitting, you know, get them off the sofa and just feeling sorry for themselves. And we have some great stories. I think that one of the guys who's actually qualifying for the Simpson Cup today, we've got the qualification in Britain at the moment, final qualifying. And he had a sort of brain injury and wanted to work outside. And we got him a sort of four-month trial and sort of try greenkeeping at Royal Lytham, which he passed with flying colors, and they gave him a job.
Wow.
A year into it, there was a machine that the golf director or whatever had got in to do something with the golf course. They'd rented it, and it broke down, and it was 24 hours to get it fixed. And David said, well, hold on, I think I could fix this. Because you forget, a lot of these guys have got a lot of qualifications in other areas. And he duly fixed it in about 2 hours. And now he is in charge of all machinery at Wentworth Golf Club.
Oh, my.
So that's the sort of successes you have. And I think the other thing that I must mention is Harry Buddha is an actual Gurkha from Nepal. And Harry is a both legs high up amputee. And he lost them in Afghanistan. And he joined on course, did very well, got his confidence and self-esteem back, and actually played in the Simpson Cup at Maidstone and in New York. And about a year later, he said, John, I've got to do something, and I won't be able to play much golf until I've done this. So we all said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to climb Everest to be the first high-up double amputee ever to. And he had 5 world records before going into, and obviously COVID stopped him going to Everest a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. But he went in May and successfully climbed Everest with no legs.
Is that right?
Yeah. And that, to me, I get emotional just thinking about it. He is, you know, and now he said, now, John, I want to get back to playing golf again. I've missed it.
That's amazing. What a great story.
Oh, yeah. Harry Buddha Magar. You can look him up and you'll see a lot of the film of what they're doing. And they're doing a documentary on it now as well, which is great. But it all came through the On Course Foundation. That's how we got him.
John, you mentioned things like this. You've got a lot of events that you guys do. What are some of the things that are coming up?
Well, we've got, obviously, in States and here, we have, especially during this time of the year, you know, a couple of events a year. We have Introduction to Golf, and then we have a 2-day event where when you've been introduced, and we do the sort of coaching element, and we teach them the all the areas of golf, the etiquette, the rules, and the history, because of always trying to get them employment. And when you think, two of our guys, by the way, both with the same injury, one American and one Brit, both have high up left leg amputations. And never really played any golf before their injuries, and both have turned pro. And one of them has played on the Korn Ferry Tour, first ever amputee, military amputee to play. And the Brit has played on the European tour, on the disability one, and won the Irish Open last year.
Wow!
So that's amazing. And then yes. we've got the Simpson Cup, which is what the qualifying for is today. For the Brits, and we had the American final qualifying 2 weeks ago, and that's 13 injured Americans against 13 injured Brits in a sort of Ryder Cup style match play. And we do 1 year in America, 1 year here. We're in Baltus Royal last year, and we're in Royal Lytham this year. And you know, we've got some really exciting venues coming up in the next few years as well. So And it's all even, actually, because we started at TPC Sawgrass. So it's 6-6 at the moment. So it's all to play for, as I say. And the Simpson Cup is in on the 24th of September at Royalism this year.
That's fantastic. John, for our listeners who want to get more involved and want to learn more about the OnCourse Foundation and reach out if they are a military veteran or know someone who could benefit from what you're doing at the foundation, how can they do it?
Sure. Well, the best thing is to go on the web, and it's OnCourseFoundationUSA.org. And then if you go through that, and then our guys or girls will get back to you, and, you know, we'll see if we can get you along to get you going at golf. And even if you have played a bit of golf, we still want you, and, you know, to not only to get you to as good as you can golf-wise, but also look at the employment side, which at the end of the day, I think when we look back on this, it would be a huge thing to know that not only have we got them playing golf, but we've got them employment as well. That makes me very happy.
No doubt. Are you guys out on social media? Is there a way to follow you guys?
Yeah, I think there is, but it'll be on the website. It'll tell you all that on there, in Instagram and all that, just OnCourse Foundation.
Well, John, it's a huge privilege getting to spend some time with you and learn about your background, your life, and the great things you're doing with the OnCourse Foundation. I hope you'll come back soon. Keep us updated with all the great things you're doing, because it's been really a privilege to get to spend some time with you. You're fantastic.
Well, Chris, thank you very much. And I if you think, and I'll take that as a compliment for everybody else, because the guys and girls we have are the fantastic ones. They're quite amazing. They really are. And we're very proud of them as people. And you know, you couldn't get finer ambassadors for the two countries for anywhere than these guys.
John, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. I hope we get to catch
Chris.
Up soon.
Thanks a lot. I look forward to it.
So do I. Take care, John.
Bye-bye. Bye.
That is John Simpson, folks. Tremendous, tremendous career that he has had. And please go online. If you're a veteran or you know a veteran who could use some support and some help, go online to OnCourseFoundationUSA.org. They're doing such great things for our military veterans. John is just an amazing man. He's done so much over the course of his career. I love that part of the story where he said he reached out to Mark McCormick and told him, "You can't do this without me." How great is that? And then getting to be a part of supporting the big three of Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, his wonderful relationship with Mr. Player, him becoming a patron of the OnCourse Foundation, and going from the big three to then handling the business affairs for Nick Faldo, Vijay Singh, Bernard Langer, Nick Price, and several others after that. Fantastic stuff from him, from his career to now what he's doing with the OnCourse Foundation. So reach out if you know a veteran or if you are a veteran who needs support. And I look forward to having John back on the show again sometime soon. Okay, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this very special segment of Next on the Tee. Next week, scheduled to join me are Jane Blaylock, Mark Calcavecchia, Rich Katz, and Joe Groman. Four fantastic guests, four great people. And I'm so honored that they are going to be joining me again next week. And folks, I can't thank you enough for continuing to make Next on the Tee a part of your regular golf content. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.